TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's Myron on Hoops with Myron Metcalf.
Myron Metcalf, Myron on Hoops with Manny Hill. Manny Fresh, the one and only. How you doing, Manny?
I'm good as always, my man.
It's good, man. It's good. Let me ask you a question that might dictate whether or not we continue the show. Are you a one bracket guy and you put it in different pools, or are you a 75 bracket guy?
I'm somewhere in between. I've got
My goodness. Manny.
I got three brackets in one pool.
Manny. Right now. That's not you, man. You strike me as like one of those guys who would, you know, one bracket and you'd spread it around. I can't believe that you're a multiple bracket guy.
I got three brackets in one pool.
Manny, when did this happen?
But here's the thing, though, Myron. Like, I've got this was filling out my third bracket was very, very difficult because I first of all, in all three of my brackets, I have Duke in the championship game.
Okay.
And I have them winning in two of the three brackets. And I got to the third bracket with Duke and Kentucky in the final, and I was like, okay, wait a minute. I've got Duke winning the first two brackets that I filled out, so maybe I need to change it up here. And I picked Kentucky to win the third bracket over Duke. But I have Duke in the championship game of all three brackets.
Manny, I just
But it's hard, though, Myron, because it's – I mean, you look at Duke this year, and it's – I went through – all of my brackets, and it's like I can't. It was very hard to find a spot where Duke loses before the championship game. Now, of course, I'm going to say this and watch them get beat in like the Sweet 16 or something.
You are jinxing it. Of course, I am. You're saying a lot.
Of course, I am.
But I thought you were one of those guys, one bracket, and you roll with it, you know, in sort of that pure form. Because I don't know.
I've done that in the past. I will say I've done that in the past where I've just gone with one bracket and that's it.
That's what I do. And you know what? When I lose in my pools, I feel good about it. Because it's like, yes, I didn't do the multi-bracket thing. I just took one bracket, filled it out, and yeah. I was terrible. But, you know, that's it. Okay. If you would have told me you had like 50 brackets, I would have probably said, okay, let's end the show. Let's let this be the last segment, because I'm not doing a show with a 50 bracket guy.
No, I can't do that. That's way too many.
I can't get involved.
I'm even pushing it with three, to be honest with you. The most I've ever done is two.
Okay.
In the past.
Well, I'm terrible in my brackets, and I cover college basketball for ESPN. I've been covering college basketball since 2007, and I'm old, man. And I'm terrible. I'm terrible this time of year. You know what happens to me, Manny? Mm. So for ESPN, I put out the big file that comes out as soon as the Selection Sunday show is over, right? So I give you something on 68 teams. It's about a 6,000-word file. It honestly takes me – the reason why I come out here, it takes me like four nights to do it. Like I'm legitimately here leaving at 1 a.m. I'm not asking you guys to feel sorry for me, but – it drops, and it's a big load off, you know, big weight off my shoulders when it does drop on Sunday and people read it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I do that, and I still get people who are like, hey, I need your insight. So what I'll do now is I'll send them that file, and I tried to do that. I told someone this week. I'm like, listen, you know, my brackets are always terrible, but here's a link to the story I wrote, and if you want information, you know, check that out. And this person told me, I want to hear it directly from you. Wait a minute now, okay?
Hold up a minute.
Hold on a second. That doesn't work in any other industry. If I'm a mechanic and I say, you know what, this is what I think you should have looked at in your car. Like, don't say that I've got to fix it for free. Don't tell me that. Like, I'm trying to help people, and it's just frustrating, Manny, because you know what? A, my brackets are terrible. B, I write 6,000 words every doggone year that you can look at if you want to know about these teams, but somehow that still isn't enough, Manny. How do I win against people who think I have some insight and won't take, you know, the work I've done to try to give them that insight? They don't think that's sufficient. What do I do?
I don't know. Well, what always gets me, too, is
you know, and I've followed you for a long time. We've known each other for a couple of years now. And what always gets me is every year, if you pick against a team, a specific team in your bracket, like that fan base is always like really mad at you.
they
come after you on Twitter, man. It's crazy. And you know, and you take it in and you engage with people and all of that. But that's what always trips me out every year. But how to get better at it? I don't know,
I don't know.
It's a hard thing, man. I mean,
this time of year makes people nuts, man. It just makes people crazy.
UMBC just screwed up everybody's bracket last year by beating Virginia in the first round. And I don't know, man. I don't know. I have not won a bracket pool in, I think I was in college the last time I won.
Oh, yeah. One. Yeah.
So the last time I won one was 2000. I think it was the year George Mason went to the Final Four. 2006.
Yeah,
that was the last time I actually was in a pool and put a bracket in a pool and actually won.
That was about the same time for me. That was about me. I was. That was about the time when I was at my best. Yahoo. One time, I finished within the top 100, and in my particular pool, I was like second. It was like a big, huge pool, and I was like second. I mean, that was the best I've ever done.
Mm-hmm.
Then I started caring about college basketball, and that's when everything, you know, fell apart. And this year, I tried to do something that I usually don't do. I'm a risk taker. I'm the guy who fills out his bracket, and I go, you know what? I am going to make assumptions. I'm going to pick the underdog. I'm going to pick that team that, you know, if they play their best game, they've got a shot. This year, for me, for the most part, it was the higher seeds, and I don't feel good about it.
Yeah.
You know, but my Final Four, Duke, because I think Zion is a Power Ranger, Gonzaga, because they beat Duke, and obviously they've been a really good team, and, you know, whatever, say they played in the West Coast Conference and they didn't face the same competition. They've been winning a lot of games in dominant fashion. I picked Kentucky to go to the Final Four, but now PJ Washington, you know, missing today's game. Is that going to be something that affects them going forward? So I'm not sure about that pick. And then I picked Virginia, the team that lost to UMBC. And I know what's going to happen, Manny. I know exactly what's going to happen. I'm going to be wrong on all my picks, I think. I just don't.
Even Duke?
Here's the thing about Duke. Duke is unlike any team we've ever seen in terms of Zion is just a different animal, right? Mm-hmm. But we have never seen a team shoot this poorly from the three-point line and make a run to the Final Four. It just hasn't happened.
Yeah.
They are legitimately one of the worst three-point shooting teams in all of America. It's not like they're just like one of the worst in the ACC, you know, one of the worst in Power Five. They are one of the worst three-point shooting teams in America. And that can catch up to you, man.
Yeah, it can.
In the NCAA tournament.
Especially when you got teams like Auburn that throw threes, man, like the Houston Rockets, and drill them at a regular rate. Like
Auburn's just pulling.
Yeah.
Auburn ain't calling plays. They're not having timeouts. Like Auburn ain't practicing. They are just showing up like it's Rucker Park, and they're just pulling. Like those dudes are just throwing up shots.
Dude, I think Auburn could potentially go on a run here. And you know, like, I'm not a fan of Bruce Pearl because, you know, my Tennessee ties and everything, but you know, that's a team that if they catch fire, if they get hot,
they got a chance
from behind the line. They can play with just about anybody in the country if they get hot from behind the 3-point line.
See, and they got a chance. I'm with you. They got a chance. I picked Gonzaga, and I'm not in the whole, well, they didn't play certain competition, you know, therefore you got to knock them down. I mean, they beat Duke at full strength.
Mm-hmm.
That's not easy to do. Brandon Clark is going to be a first-round pick. Rui Hachimura will be a first-round pick. That's two first-round picks for a really talented team, right?
Yeah.
But I do think that sometimes when you haven't faced an elite team in a lengthy stretch, I know they lost to St. Mary's in the West Coast Conference Tournament, but when you've gone a couple bumps without really facing that kind of Mike Tyson in the 80s, you kind of get shell-shocked a little bit, I think. And they're playing some teams in that bracket that could do that to them. They could run into Florida State again like they did last year. By the way, Manny, the selection committee claims, right? They claim that they don't care about storylines, that they don't care about marketing and TV, but yet they do everything to put teams on this, you know, collision course.
Oh, yeah.
And I think they did that to Minnesota. I think it's unfair what they did to Minnesota.
Of course.
I really do, because, you know, say what you want about Richard Pitino, say what you want about the Gophers. To have Richard Pitino have to go into a press conference in Des Moines, Iowa, and I counted, 5 of 13 questions were related to his father, right, and Louisville. That's just not fair. I mean, the kids in the locker room, Jordan Murphy, Dupree McBriar, the questions they're answering are about Rick Pitino. And if you're the committee and a 7 versus a 10, you can put them anywhere. You're not going to have controversy, right? And you're not, you don't have to abide by regional values or logistics or things like that. You can put them anywhere. But to pair them together, and, you know, Chris Mack as well even said, look, this isn't fair. I think they should have, I think the committee should have had more self-awareness in making this pairing, because he was kind of getting tired of questions as well. Manny, that to me was unfair to put the Gophers in that situation to where they've got to deal with those things that have nothing to do with the game going into such a significant matchup.
Yeah, no, I agree, and we kind of see the NCAA do this quite a bit with almost every matchup, and I know that they like to have the storylines and all that stuff.
But they say they don't. They say they don't care about it.
Yeah, but you know they do.
Exactly.
And that's kind of what bugs me is, you know, they kind of do it behind the scenes. It seems like they try to put these certain matchups together because it'll be great theater and everything. And you know, a lot of times it does end up being great theater, but
yeah,
it does come off as very, very manufactured. Like this, when it was first announced that the Gophers were going to be matched up with Louisville, me and Ross Brendel, we did the watch along during the selection show on Score North on social media and everything. And when it popped up that the Gophers were going to play Louisville, it was like, well, of course they are. Like, yeah, like, it's just like, yeah, okay, that, of course they're going to do it that way. Like, it just, yeah, it only made sense for them to do something like that. But yeah, it was really, I don't know, man. It does seem like, you know, why would you even want to put those kids? You know, Richard Pitino, I think, could handle that sort of thing, being asked about his dad.
Yeah, he did. He handled it well.
But to put the Gopher players in that sort of situation is a little bit unfair, because they have nothing to do. You know, Amir Coffey and Dupree McBriar and Jordan Murphy, all those, they have nothing to do with Louisville or anything that happened to do, you know, anything that happened with Louisville ever, you know?
Well, and that's the thing is, you know, you still have to face that question, you know? And it's not just Louisville, Minnesota. You look at Arizona State Buffalo, Nate Oates playing his mentor, Bobby Hurley. And I did the Selection Sunday show for ESPN Radio on Sirius XM, Channel 80, and Nate Oates called in and he said, look, man, this is not good. He was frustrated, you know? He's got to play his mentor in this matchup, because guess what? That's going to be fun for TV, fun for all the storylines attached to that. And I think that is where you go, okay, I get it, because this is the NCAA tournament is what it is because of the TV deal, the multi-billion-dollar TV deal, and the, you know, the attention that comes in this 3-week stretch. But man, I just felt like a guy in Richard Pitino, who, say what you want about him, right? And regardless of the outcome of today's game, I think there are a lot of folks who will agree making the tournament ended any speculation about what happens next year with Richard Pitino.
Correct. Yep.
At the same time, this is a guy who is doing his best, I feel like, to try to separate himself and to prove that, yes, Rick Pitino is a big part of why I'm here. And he's admitted that. Mm-hmm. You know, he has not shied away from the fact that if Rick Pitino had not been his father, he wouldn't have gotten some of these opportunities. But he is trying to establish his own legacy, which making the tournament is a huge part of that. Advancing in the tournament is a big part of it as well, but making the tournament, man, is a huge component of that. So you get this team to its second tournament in 3 years, Manny, and then you walk into that building in Des Moines, and the questions are, well, You're playing the team that fired your dad 2 years ago. What do you think? Hey, Chris Mack, you're coaching against the son of the former coach where you're at. What do you think that is? And the assumption is, oh, these kids can handle it. And I do think they can, Manny. But they're also pretty young, mm-hmm. you know? And this is the kind of stuff that can kind of get into your head a little bit. And almost you don't want guys going into a game feeling like, I've got to play for my coach for something bigger than what the game is, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like that's the Rick Pitino element that was added to this matchup.
But don't you feel like Richard Pitino went into this game today, though, and tried to at least tried to get the kids to the players to sort of blank out all of that noise? Like, don't even, you know, before the game started today, I would assume that he went up to these guys and just said, don't, you know, this team is just another opponent that we have to play and that we have to, you know, compete against to try and advance in this tournament. That it's, you know, to all this noise about Louisville and, you know, my dad coaching here and everything, just blank that out. Like, that's not what this is about. I got to think Richard Pitino's a smart enough guy that he went into this matchup today and sent that message to the kids. And maybe even earlier this week, he sent that message and hammered that into the kids that, you know, don't let yourself get distracted by, you know, all of the outside noise, the storylines that people are going to try and pit on this matchup, you know, going forward here.
Yeah, Manny, I'm sure he did do that. But
how effective was it?
I mean, this is a team that lost to Boston College. This is a team that lost to Rutgers, you know, in a critical
That's true.
Situation. In a weird way, this is almost a team that's better when they're not thinking about anything other than just playing, right? Mm-hmm. When the stakes aren't kind of right there in front of them. And it's like as soon as they think about the stakes, you know, oh, my goodness, you know, Rutgers, you lose to Rutgers. All right, fine. We're probably not making the NCAA tournament as of late February. And then you go beat Northwestern. Oh, then you go beat Purdue. Oh, wait a minute. We're in the mix again. Oh, we lose to Maryland. Okay, whatever. Big deal. Let's see what happens at the tournament. You win two games. This is the kind of team that I feel like has to be distraction-free. I mean, they got to get Amir Coffey to play well every game, too. I mean, that's a big part of what's happened this season as well. But I just felt like the committee didn't have to do this.
Sure.
Like they didn't have to set up this matchup.
They totally could have avoided it, yeah.
It was avoidable. And in an era where coaches and programs are defined in a single elimination tournament, there's nothing like that. Well, I shouldn't say that. There's obviously single elimination tournaments that decide championships, but none with 68 teams. But in an era where you can be great all year, lose your first game, and then everybody doubts you, you know, how you pair these teams is very important. Now, I also think Louisville would have never been in this game had they avoided that 23-point comeback to Duke. I mean, if they just hold off Duke for 10 minutes, Louisville is not a 7 seed. So that's a part of this.
I'm still baffled as to that how that happened, man.
Like, is that not one later. Of the most amazing comebacks you've ever seen, man?
Yeah.
You ever seen anything comparable to that? I was watching it, Manny, and to watch those players fold, mm-hmm. to watch Louisville look around like, wait a minute, this is happening to us, and we can't do anything about it. And to see Chris Mack, like, he knew, I just don't have these dudes aren't the kind of dudes who are going to fight back in this situation.
Yeah.
Oh, that was terrible.
And once Duke got it down to single digits,
bro,
it was just like, yeah, this they're going to
go back. Home.
Yeah, this thing's over.
Everybody go home.
Duke was down 9, and you felt like, yeah, they're going to win this game.
That was it. Dude, Coach K stopped coaching. Zion said he was like, I don't coach losers. I mean, Coach K wasn't talking. It wasn't like this, oh, man, yeah, he's encouraging us. No, it was like, dude, this is it. You all embarrass me. And then they hit the button, man, and they made that run. Oh, my goodness. That was, to me, I still have that. I don't save a lot of games because I have synergy and I can go back and watch any game I want, you know. But I still have that DVR, that Louisville-Duke game.
Yeah.
And that's one of the games from this season, man, that I'll watch again just because I can't believe you blew a 23-point lead. In the NBA, what are the Brooklyn Nets? What were they up? They were down 24?
24-25 to Sacramento.
In the fourth,
yeah.
right?
And D'Lo just went off, yeah.
I'm less fascinated by that because that's what happens in the NBA. Like the players obviously are more skilled, and runs in the NBA are so common, I'm never really surprised by anything.
And with the evolution of the three-point shot and everybody yes. making threes and everything, scoring has gone up in the NBA with the three-point shot. Yeah, it's a little – it's still incredible, but when you consider that all of those guys are professionals and they're yes. all very, very skilled and – You know, and D'Angelo Russell, we know how talented he is too. I mean, it's a little bit different.
Yeah, and in the 80s and 90s, you know, Lane Beer and Rodman would have clotheslined him. He would have never that run would have stopped one way or the other. You know, it yeah. was either going to stop because they played good defense, or it was going to stop because you know what did they say in Detroit? They had that tap tap. It was as soon as they say tap tap, man, you're going to be on the sideline one way or the other. Yeah, I'm less fascinated in NBA, but college is a different deal. But I still feel like, you know, and I have someone who has been critical of Richard Pitino and Minnesota and what they have and have not done. I did feel like that setup and forcing those young men who had earned their way into this. Let's make it clear. You beat Purdue twice in 10 days. You earned that. Mm-hmm. That wasn't a situation where the committee had some decision to make. Minnesota played its way into the field.
Yeah.
And then to put him in that scenario, I just thought that was unfair to everybody, everyone involved. We'll be back. Myron on Hoop, Myron Metcalf, Manny Hill after this. Myron Metcalf back for another edition of Myron on Hoops on a Thursday this time. Manny Hill, as always, with me. We've got a guest, Brian Oringer. Am I saying that right, Brian? Oringer or Oringer?
Oringer's perfect.
So you're fascinating to me, man. Brian was a former head video coordinator with the Washington Wizards. He was an advanced scout with the Hawks and the Raptors. Obviously, in this business, you know, if you're talking about folks either at the college level or NBA level, you know a lot of scouts. What does that all entail? I mean, for a lot of folks who don't see you, guys like you, and what you do behind the scenes, you know, what's a week like for you in that role as a scout?
Yeah, so as an advanced scout, you know, the job is basically, I tell people, it's like you're being a legal spy. So every team in the NBA has an advanced scout, but that job basically is just to pretty much steal the play calls. So, you know, if I was doing it for the Hawks and we were playing, you know, the Warriors soon, I would go watch the Warriors and just pretty much watch Steve Kerr the entire time and try to get every single play call. So, you know, that job is not as relentless, but when I was head video coordinator with the Wizards, that's when you're really, you know, full-time with a team, you know, with them for 7-8 months straight with maybe one or two off days. You know, you're working 7 a.m. to midnight almost every day. It's a grind. You know, you're doing everything you can to be with the coaching staff every day and be with the players and, you know, make sure the preparation for every game is top notch.
You're interesting because, you know, you have this video that you put together about Zion Williamson. I was in Maui early this year, the Maui Invite. Probably no less than 40 to 50 NBA scouts and execs were down in Maui courtside for every game that Zion played. I actually think Maui is where he kind of went from intriguing to certain number one pick. But since that time, I'm not sure I've dealt with another player who was more sort of all over the board in terms of how people viewed him at the next level and what he might be. I think there's a consensus that he'll be the number one pick, Brian, but there is not consensus on how good he'll actually be and who he'll evolve into. You've scouted him. You've got a great video about him. Everyone thinks that – a lot of people think that he can be a legend at the next level as well. What say you?
Yeah, you know, I think he'll be a really, really good player, and I think he has, you know, tremendous talent, like you said. And ultimately, to be fair, you know, I think with almost every guy who's in contention, you know, for a top 3-5 pick, whatever, they have potential to be, you know, perennial all-stars, to be amazing players. And a lot of that's just, again, up to them and how hard they're going to work at the next level and situation they're in and so on. But, yeah, to be honest with you, you know, I see very, very good player. I see a guy, you know, with a great motor, obviously great athleticism, who can, you know, be a really impactful defensive player, a guy in transition, you know, dunker, all those things, obviously. I just, you know, I'm not sure I see transcendent. I see a lot of holes in his game in terms of not being able to go right, you know, use his right hand really around the basket. I see him wanting to get back to his left hand, his right shoulder almost every time. I see a shot that I don't see is going to really translate at a really high level. You know, so some of that stuff just makes me question, you know, what's his role going to be offensively in the half court? You know, and again, like I said, it's nitpicking, and I think for sure he's deserving, you know, top three, if not obviously the first pick. But, yeah, I just sometimes when I hear people say, you know, the next LeBron and just comparisons like that, you know, I try to pump the brakes a little bit. And when I took an in-depth look at him, you know, like I said, I saw a guy kind of like a Draymond defensively, a guy that has the potential to switch everything and be really active and do it all, and has, you know, some of the abilities that LeBron has in terms of being able to get steals and go the other way and get a ton of blocks and all that. But, you know, I also saw shades of like a Julius Randle, you know, supercharged, undersized four, you know, very left-hand dominant, you know, good feel for the game, things like that. And yeah, I think he'll be a really good player. I'm just not sure if I see, you know, the same thing that a lot of others do.
Brian, when you look at this class, I mean, you're describing something that I feel like affects a lot of the guys at the top, whether it's Zion, RJ, Ja Morant. The NBA is a league where now you have to be able to play in space. What are the chances that these guys at the top can do that? Because none of them are great three-point shooters.
Yeah, to be honest with you, I've, you know, Zion's really the only one I've looked at super in-depth so far. I'm going to try to get to the other, you know, top five or ten. But, yeah I think you kind of hit it on the head there that, you know, even people that I know he doesn't get comped to Giannis a ton, but people talk about, you know, how transcendent he is. It took Giannis even a really long time to figure out how to be an efficient player and be a, you know, superstar at the NBA level. You know, the first couple years of his career, people thought, oh, you know, he's a freak athlete, he's fun to watch and all those things, but nobody, you know, saw him becoming a MVP candidate in those first couple years. So, yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing I, you know, have seen from my experience and just try to convey to people is, again, we really just don't know, you know, until they get to the next level, how much harder it is, how much, you know, tighter your handle has to be to make those quick and efficient moves, you know, how hard you have to play every single possession for 35 minutes a night for 82 games. You know, it's a beast, like I'm sure you know. So, yeah, you know, I think there's some great talent for sure, but I'm definitely going to try to get to the rest of them as well and see who I think, you know, can really translate the best into the way the NBA plays today.
How surprised are you by the way the NBA has evolved? Man, I'm watching Russell Westbrook, a guy who, you know, a few years ago, unstoppable was what you wanted to emulate. And now it's almost like the league is changing and he's sort of the same player as everyone is just developing more and more skills. How surprised are you with how quickly things have changed in the NBA with the number of guys who are skilled and skilled shooters at that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an amazing time to be an NBA fan. I think the game's at its highest level, you know, it's been in a long, long time. You know, I think the three-point revolution in particular is just unbelievable. You know, if you had told me 5 years ago, you know, that Brooke Lopez might be one of the best stretch fives of all time, and he's taking step-back threes off the dribble.
Hey, he's helping my Bucks, like, man. I love it. He's helping my Bucks.
I called him the Bucks MVP. I mean, I know Giannis is the most important guy, obviously, but Brooke's really the reason, you know, that I think their offense and defense even have gone from where it was to best in the league. You know, he just gives them so much space that he's out there at 30 feet, you know, every possession, that they practice with a four-point line. That's where they tell him to stand in practice. And that opens up so much space for Giannis and Middleton and all those guys to attack off the dribble. So, yeah, I mean, the game's just evolved in an amazing way. And that's, you know, that's part of the issue, honestly, that I see with Zion. Just that if he's going to be, you know, an undersized four in the NBA, he's going to be you know, just spaced out on a lot of possessions on the perimeter, and he's going to have to, you know, be a three-point shooter. And I see a guy for sure that could, you know, hit a couple a game, kind of like Randall has. But, you know, I'm just not sure. You know, he's got a really slow-loading shot. It's kind of flat at times. You know, I'm not sure it's going to translate to a really high-level shooter. But, yeah, but then, like I said, you do see guys like Brook and, you know, Channing Frye and other guys that came into the league not as much volume shooting bigs who now are taking, you know, 10 threes a game, and just have Marc Gasol, you know, guys that have completely changed their game like that is amazing.
So are you saying, Manny, I don't want to bring up this name, but there's a guy in Minnesota, maybe you've heard of him, Brian. His name is Andrew Wiggins.
Oh, boy. Had to bring him up, didn't you, Myron?
Well, listen, Brian's talking about, Brian is over here doing Dr. Phil, saying all these guys can change. I'm just curious where Andrew Wiggins fits in all of that. This is a guy in his mid-20s. Can he do what others have done and change his game to become a guy who can? Well, I think people in Minnesota will take Andrew Wiggins being able to shoot a little bit. I mean, is he a guy who can evolve into a more effective shooter?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know. I go back and forth on his game a lot. Part of me thinks,
join the party, man.
What's that?
Join the party. Everybody goes back and forth on him.
Right. No, part of me thinks that he maybe has let the analytics and the three-point revolution kind of get to him a little bit too much. I thought, you know, watching him his first couple of years, I mean, he played in that, you know, Jimmy Butler mid-post face-up, you know, jab step from like 15 feet. That was kind of his game, and that's what he did, you know, really well. And then I think, you know, last year and this year in particular, he's really, you know, he's tried to drift out to three and become more of a floor spacer, but that's not really his game, you know. And I think you see, like, even Butler, you know, he can shoot the three, he takes a few a game, but, you know, Jimmy Butler's really at his best, you know, from 17 feet around the elbows and so on. And I don't know, I think part of me thinks that if Wiggins really, really hones in on that and gets back to trying to play like a DeRozan or a Butler, you know, be a mid-range guy, I think that's maybe his best chance of being the best version of himself. But, you know, I think obviously the analytics guys and all the pressure of the way the league's going is everybody's in his head saying, don't take long cues, you know, take every shot from three. So, yeah, I just, you know, sometimes even like Russ, you see, you know, he takes, you know, so many threes and is shooting, what, 26% or something. I think he used to be kind of an elite mid-range guy, and there's all this pressure to just move back and take threes, and you know, it works for some guys, but DeRozan, even, for example, you know, he's hardly taken any threes for the Spurs this year, and he's still been phenomenal. So I think some guys, you know, mid-range isn't dead yet, in my opinion. I think the guys that do it really well should stick with it, and you know, I think Wiggins might be one of those guys that should focus on that area instead of trying to be a floater on the perimeter.
All right. Brian, definitely want to thank you for your time, man. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me. Enjoyed it.
Okay. It's Brian Oringer, former video coordinator for Washington Wizards, talking Zion and Wiggins and all things NBA. We'll be back here on Myron on Hoops after this.
Phil Mackey here from the all-new Score North on 1500 and scorenorth.com. We've made it easier than ever to find our team-centric Minnesota sports podcast. Wherever you subscribe to podcasts, just search Score North, that's S-K-O-R, and you'll find Score North Vikings, for instance, which includes Purple Daily, Purple Podcast, and Vikings Ventline. Score North Wolves includes Raised by Wolves, Myron Medcalf on Hoops, and more. Score North Twins includes Touch 'Em All, Royce on Baseball, and more, and so on. Just search Score North, S-K-O-R, wherever you find your favorite podcast.
Myron Medcalf back here on Myron on Hoops with Manny Hill. Manny, everybody's talking about Joel Embiid and what he said after last night's game, claiming that he is the, quote, most unstoppable player in the NBA. He said this after they beat Boston by three. Marcus Smart shoved him in the back, got ejected, which was so unlike Marcus Smart, by the way. I mean, he never
he would never do something like that.
That is just no. So out of character,
yeah,
man.
Of course not.
Out of Marcus Smart. he said, look, man, I think I'm the most. I think he told Cassidy Hubert that on ESPN that he was the most unstoppable player in the league. You buy that?
No, I don't. And I like Joel Embiid a lot. And I think he is absolutely like one of the 10 best players in the NBA. But I'm not sure I agree. I think I look at guys like Kevin Durant, LeBron James still, obviously, Steph Curry. I think there are a lot of guys I put ahead of him in terms of how unstoppable they are. Now, he's a tough guard, man. Like, he's a tough guy to defend against, and we know how good he is. But, yeah, I still got to put KD, LeBron, Steph, James Harden. I think I put all those guys ahead of him.
Would if he were more durable, would you think otherwise? I mean, because that has to play a role too, right? I mean, he's granted been available lately, but there's always the threat with an Embiid that he misses 20 games for some reason. Like, that's always the concern. But I will say, you know, he's definitely on that list. You know, sure. Nobody's LeBron and no one's KD, but he is on that list of, if I need a bucket and I need a play, I'm confident that Joel Embiid will find a way to make something happen. Now, Giannis has certainly elevated his game, and now Giannis might be at the top of that list, honestly. If Giannis becomes an effective three-point shooter in the next couple seasons, he's going to be the greatest player in the league, and he's going to revolutionize the game.
Yeah.
But I feel like Embiid's on the list. I don't think he's the list, though.
He's in the conversation, I think. He's definitely in the conversation. But if you ask me right now who's the most unstoppable player in the league, I'm definitely leading more Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, LeBron.
Definitely.
That group of guys.
And I actually think Embiid is closer to the Karl Anthony Towns, Kyrie, if that's, you know, that next group of guys.
Sure, yeah.
Than he is to Steph and James Harden and LeBron James and Kevin Durant. I mean, is that fair?
Yeah, no, I think that's very fair. I agree 100%, yeah.
But, like, so I was thinking about it, and I'm like, Embiid is, I mean, obviously he's been one of the more unstoppable players, but Karl Towns is there. You know, if you told an NBA team, if you told Karl Towns, listen, I need you to make a play, you know, there's no one who's going to stop him. Especially the way that he's been playing lately, I think Karl Towns, healthy when healthy, is in that second tier with Embiid in terms of just being a player that who can guard him. I mean, who can stand in front of a guy like that and really defend him consistently? There's nobody.
Yeah, I mean, Cat. The great thing about Cat is that he can score from anywhere on the floor.
Yes.
You know, he can score on the low block. He can score in the mid-range game. He can score from the perimeter. He's a terrific three-point shooter. He can put the ball on the deck and make things happen. He's an excellent role man on a pick and roll situations. It's just unfortunate that the Wolves don't run enough pick and roll or pick and pop type of scenarios and plays for Karl Anthony Towns. But he can score just about anywhere on the floor efficiently too. That's the other part of it, is you look at just wherever you put Cat on the floor and you look at the numbers, the shooting numbers, it's efficient everywhere on the floor. And it's a rare thing, man. It's a rare thing. Joel Embiid is really good on the low block, and he's got really good footwork, and he's strong, he's powerful. And he's really good at putting himself in positions to score efficiently on the low block. Mid-range, he's pretty solid. Three-point shooting, I think, has taken a dip for him, though, this year. He's kind of regressed a little bit from the perimeter. He's not shooting as well from three as he did, you know, last year and even 2 years ago.
It's I mean, Karl Towns, Embiid, I mean, there's that group of guys. And, you know, again, there's a lot of stuff that has to happen this offseason. But, you know, I think the T-Wolves have that guy as much as the 76ers do.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're quite comparable. Bobby Marks just dropped this on ESPN. He's got an insider column. Bobby Marks works for ESPN, former executive, NBA exec. It's called The Next Moves for the Wolves, Trade, Draft, and Front Office Decisions. And one of the things he talked about, beyond, you know, the obvious finding stability as head coach, he essentially talks about how fair is it to judge Ryan Saunders in this 13-18 record when he hasn't had Robert Covington, who was one of the most efficient players in the NBA in 2017-2018, who was the guy who, you know, you plug him in and you're a better team for it when he's healthy. I mean, that's the expectation. How do you measure this 13-18 stretch, Manny? Is it an incomplete? Can you give it a grade? How do you assess it? And then how do you use this to feel confident about what steps the T-Wolves should take going forward?
Well, I kind of view it more as an incomplete. And I think when you look at the injury situation, it looks like, you know, Robert Covington is going to be out for the season. It looks like Derrick Rose is probably not going to play again this season. You know, the Wolves dropped something not too long ago where it looks like Rose is expected to miss the rest of the season. It looks like they took an MRI on Derrick Rose's elbow, and there looks like he's going to be out for the season. I haven't confirmed anything yet, but it just looks like, based on what the Wolves have tweeted out and everything. So, I mean, when you look at the injury situation, I mean, Robert Covington's their second best he's their second best player, really, to be honest with you. And he's their best defensive player. And he hasn't played in 2019 at all. Yep. The last time he played was, I think, New Year's Eve of, you know, 2018. And not having him, I think, it's been a huge blow, especially on the defensive end. And so it's hard to really judge Ryan and the record and how the team has done completely. I will say the defensive numbers, the defensive metrics, especially over the last few weeks, have not been good. And I think that if Ryan is going to be the head coach going forward, that is definitely an area that needs to be address. Getting Robert Covington back and healthy in a full offseason with the organization, I think will help tremendously. But I think rather it's defensive philosophy and also improving the personnel on that end of the floor. I mean, that's going to need to be a priority this summer for sure. Especially if Ryan is going to continue to have the head coaching job.
Yeah, they were 17th under Tibbs. They have been 24th in defensive efficiency under Ryan Saunders. They have been 12th in offensive efficiency. Now, I think a lot of that is Karl Towns decided he was no longer playing any games with these people and he was going to dominate. But they have been a good offensive team, but I agree. Defensively, they've got to figure it out. I still think they're in a position to say, okay, we got a lot of questions, a lot of personnel moves. Who's the GM? Who's making these decisions? Mm-hmm. A lot of things you just don't know about the T-Wolves going into the offseason. But it still feels like to me saying, okay, Ryan Saunders, at least for now, at least for the coming year, is our coach. I'm not sure how that hurts you, you know, because I don't see you going out and getting someone who galvanizes this group. Like, I don't see another candidate out there,
right?
Who you go, well, okay, they've got a lot of problems defensively, and you bring in this guy and he's going to suddenly energize the locker room. They got personnel problems, right? They got to figure out, do you bring back Derrick Rose? You know, what are you going to do with T? What is T going to do? What does he want to do?
Yeah.
Because the ball is in his court. Can Covington get healthy? There are a number of questions that all feel like GM questions. But the one thing to me that even if you look at how the defense has fallen off, and let's be honest, I would imagine if you studied the defensive efficiency of teams that had gone from being in the hunt to being out of the race, I would imagine all those teams experienced a decline in their defensive efficiency because it becomes what exactly are you playing for? So I wonder how much of those numbers, Manny, are associated with that.
Yeah.
But I still think at some point soon, I honestly don't know what the delay is. At some point soon, you say, yep, Saunders is back. And at least you've answered one of, 27 questions, Manny, at least, about this team going into the season, into the offseason?
Yeah, definitely. And I think, finding the right GM, whoever that's going to be, I think is going to be a big part of it. And I go back to a conversation you and I had on this show a few weeks ago when we talked about, is it going to be Chauncey Billups or is it going to be somebody more experienced? As I've watched
you like
this
Chauncey.
Team,
you I like do, that Chauncey.
I do like Chauncey. But to your point, though, I do think it is when you look at the situation that this team is going to be in this summer. You've got contracts that are weighing on you right now that you're not getting enough production out of, and we're talking about
figure that out.
We're talking about Andrew Wiggins and Gorgui Jang.
Better figure it out.
You got to figure that out, and I think it is going to take an experienced person to do that. And that's not a knock on Chauncey, and I love Chauncey.
Yeah,
I'm very high on Chauncey, but it's going to take somebody who's really, really savvy and who has experience working through situations that are similar to this with bad contracts and finding ways to get out of these contracts and making the right moves, behind the scenes that are going to propel this team in the right direction. Because this is, number one, I don't think, even though you have Karl Anthony Towns, I don't know how appealing this job in the front office is going to be. Because, Ryan Saunders, it sounds like he's going to be the guy. At least if I were a betting man, I would bet that he's going to be the guy. So now if you're taking over as a GM, you are being presented with, okay, this is going to be your coach. You're stepping into this GM job, and if it is Ryan Saunders, you're telling that GM, Ryan Saunders is going to be your coach.
Yeah.
And you've got to make it work. And, and that's not to say that I don't think Ryan could make it work, because I think he could. But, that's one of those things that you're asking a new guy, if he's coming in, to think about. And you're asking this person to make some tough decisions. What's going to happen with Tyus Jones?
Yep.
How do you view Tyus Jones? How do you value Tyus Jones as a general manager? Do you want him to be a part of your future? He's going to be a restricted free agent. If somebody swoops in and signs him to an offer sheet, you've got to make the decision of, do you want to match that or do you want to let him go? You're going to have a lottery pick. What are you going to do with that lottery pick? So there's a lot of questions, I think, that are going to need to be answered by whoever, any new person that steps into this organization this summer.
Very true, man. And I think the other thing we know is, to your point, if you mess up this offseason, we'll be talking about this a decade from now.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not one of those off seasons, I think, where you go, well, don't worry, well, you got Karl Towns. No, this is important because Karl Towns is watching Anthony Davis, and he's watching Kyrie and Chris Paul and Jimmy Butler and all these guys who've said, you know what, I'm kind of tired of this situation.
Mm-hmm.
I know I'm under contract, but listen, I'm not coming back. So why don't we both make each other happy and make a move here? You have to be conscious of that, whoever you are as a GM. You're here to make Karl Towns happy. You're here to win, first and foremost.
Yep.
But you also want Karl Towns to be happy. Because if you mess up this offseason and he goes into the following offseason unhappy after another disappointing year, those rumors are going to start, Manny.
Yep.
I mean, this ain't going to be a 2021 situation. Those rumors are going to start in 2020 the same way they did with Anthony Davis.
Yep.
2 years, 3 years in advance before he ever made an official trade demand. If you're the Timberwolves, you do not want to put yourself in that position. Thank you for listening, as always. Manny Hill, Myron Metcalf, Myron on Hoops. We will be back next week talking more basketball.